Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon. Welcome to Focus on Aubrey. I have two guests today, and this is going to prove to be a lively discussion. We're going to talk about the effects of sugar on children, and my guest is author Barbara Swenson, and as well as plant-based nutritionist Teresa Houghton. So,
I must interject. I have to use the title wellness consultant. It's slightly different than a nutritionist, but it's still health oriented.
So, Sam, why don't you start the conversation? You're pretty passionate about the effects of sugar on children. So, tell the listening audience what you know. And how bad is the problem?
Well, I could start anywhere and continue speaking for probably several hours on this subject, but in the interest of brevity, I did a little bit of looking around. I recently read an extremely informative book called Salt, Sugar, Fat, How the Food Giants Hooked Us, and that's by Michael Moss. And believe it or not, the first chapter in that book is actually entitled Exploiting the Biology of the Child. And it talks all about how the food industry is using sugar, along with salt and fat, but this particular chapter deals with sugar, to hook people, especially children. And one of the things that they actually do is they do research to calculate what is known as the bliss point. Apparently, there is a point at which a product is, or any kind of food, is most enjoyable at a certain point of sweetness, and they will actually recruit children to do these studies. And for kids, it's a much higher level than for adults, and they will then use that point as the point where they stop adding sugar. And in some cases, with things like breakfast cereal, that point can be over 50%. It can be upwards of 80% in some products. So it's more like kids are starting their day with a bowl of candy, and it just gets worse as time goes on. And I have a statistic here somewhere about... I have this other book that I found called What Are We Feeding Our Kids? It's from 1994, but it's still relevant, and it notes that things that kids are commonly drinking, things like Coca-Cola in a 12-ounce Coke, which most people don't drink anymore, they're drinking much more than that, that has 41 grams of sugar, and think about how much soda like teenagers are drinking. In a cup of Fruit Loops, you have 13 grams of sugar. And ingesting this much sugar actually will depress immune functions. So kids will have an actual drop at anyone, but it's especially problematic for kids who are still developing and don't really have a strong immune system necessarily. They will have a reduction in immune activity for up to 2 hours after ingesting large amounts of sugar. The statistic here was 100 grams, but if you think about all the sugar that's in the breakfast cereal and then in the concentrated juice they're probably drinking with the breakfast cereal or milk, which is also extremely sugary, it only takes half an hour for that to start, and it can last a very long time. And the other seriously problematic part with sugar here is that it actually activates the same parts of your brain as heroin, nicotine, and alcohol. Now, if you said to somebody, "Oh, this morning I gave my kid heroin with a side of nicotine and alcohol," they'd be horrified. But when you're giving your kid a bowl of breakfast cereal or a pastry or a lot of these processed cookies or muffins, you're essentially doing the same thing. And the younger you start them, the earlier they're going to get hooked. Kids actually already are born with a predilection for sweet foods, because sweet is an indicator of nourishment and of caloric density. So you're feeding into an addiction that is already primed basically the moment that the kid comes into the world. And like any other addiction, they begin to need more and more of it to get the same feeling of pleasure from it, because it goes straight to your pleasure center. It then activates the release of the neurotransmitter dopamine, which is a pleasure chemical, exactly the same way that drugs do. And so you're setting them up for basically a lifelong drug addiction, but we don't think of it that way because sugar is so prevalent and so widely accepted. I found a statistic here that the average American consumes about 160 pounds of sugar a year, which translates to something like 15% of calories from sugar every day, but kids are getting more because they tend to drink more soda, juice, and other sweetened beverages. So basically what we've got is an epidemic of blatant drug addiction among children, but since it's socially acceptable and promoted by so many companies, nobody really wants to acknowledge it.
Now, this is a question I had posed previously. People lead such busy lives. There's so many parents in the workforce that, you know, parents might not necessarily choose the best option for their kids. They probably don't have the time to stand over a stove and make healthy meals constantly. So over the years, has the onset of all of these problems dealing with sugar increased? Barbara?
Oh, absolutely. The number one source of sugar is processed foods or junk foods, and you know, which are the most processed of foods. I want to go back real quick and address something Teresa said, because it's really important. She talked about the biological predilection to crave sugar. We are genetically wired to crave sweets. We're not going to change that. Even if we never had a sweet that was processed in our life, we would still like the taste of sweet. What we wouldn't like or crave is the effect of sugar, which is highly, highly refined, just as heroin is highly refined. So I just want everyone to know, you know, you can't not give your kid sugar its whole life and then think it won't have that craving, because we're all set up for that. The issue is not changing the palate of where, I loved your information about the set point of pleasure, or the set point where the body has this bliss. It's much, much lower of a set point in children who are fed whole foods like fruits versus children who are given very sugary drinks at a young age. That set point you talked about will change and migrate upward higher and higher, as you said, as their body gets more and more accustomed and needs more and more sugar to get the benefit that their brain is looking for. But definitely,
you know,
number one issue is processed foods. Go ahead.
The one thing, when you talk to anybody who's, you know, on a diet, tries to lose weight, or start a new lifestyle, they'll always say, oh, you know, I lost X amount of pounds, and Sunday is my cheat day. So when you're talking about incorporating sugar into your diet on one particular day of a week, wouldn't that be the same thing as a heroin addict saying, oh, I've been clean for a month, I think on Sunday I'll shoot up again? I mean, would you compare the two and say they're similar?
Absolutely. I would say to you, does an alcoholic have a cheat day? Does a smoker have a cheat day? Does a heroin addict have a cheat day? No. And the concept of a cheat day has actually been taken completely out of proportion. I'm not sure whether to blame the bodybuilding community or the diet community or both, but it's been taken completely out of proportion. The whole point of a cheat day, quote unquote, was actually to be, this is the day where maybe I have a reasonably sized dessert that is perhaps not as healthy as the other foods that I eat during the week. Not I go out and binge on foods that are loaded with processed ingredients until I feel like I'm going to explode. So I think we have a misconception about how we can enjoy sweetness without these extreme measures. I think for some people it's like this all or nothing idea where I either can never ever have refined sugar ever or any kind of sugar ever, or if I don't load up on it one day a week to the point where it's coming out my ears, I won't be able to stand it. I think people kind of sabotage themselves with that all or nothing. But at the same time, when you do choose a sweet food, as Barbara was mentioning, it should be as close to a whole food as humanly possible. I'm not going to say never eat another Christmas cookie in your life. But I'm also not going to say it's okay because it's the holiday season to eat hundreds of cookies because they're there.
Barbara?
Yeah, I think the whole idea, excuse me, but I really, I love this interaction. You know, the whole idea that food is something that's going to make you feel bad or feel guilty, or it's something that's going to mood alter you out of the rest of your life. Unfortunately, you really hit the nail on the head. So many diet books approach food as if it were a drug. You know, don't eat this. You get to eat this on a day if you're good. I mean, it's just insanity when the truth is food should be one of your biggest pleasures, and the pleasure should come from the nourishment and joy you feel naturally from the nutrients that we would get when we're eating correctly. And I can speak to this because I've done it, and I'm sure Teresa has too. You know, I've gone from a very, very poor diet in my childhood. I was absolutely a sugar addict. I had a very high metabolism, extremely high metabolism, and very unstable blood sugars. And so I ate tremendous amounts of candy as a child. I'm very lucky I never got diabetic. When I made the shift as an adult to a real healthy food-based, whole food-based, superfood-based diet, natural sugar-based, you know, the biggest sugar I give myself now 99% of the time is going to be maple syrup. And it's going to be on a whole food, you know, that I create. It's not just maple syrup in a sweeter. I mean, I do eat cookies upon occasion. It's really rare. But the difference is the amount of joy my body feels when I eat well cannot even compare to the shaking, aching, headachy, shivery high that you get when you overeat on processed foods and sugar. There's a tremendous difference that you won't experience until you get away from it. What about
yeah,
you?
And
have you had that experience?
Yes, I can. It's funny when you said shaky, this, that, and the other thing. One, I do not eat a whole lot of sweet desserts either. And one year I ate cookies around Christmas time, and we're talking for me over the entire Christmas season, I ate 6 cookies, but I had that exact feeling after a while. I was like, I am overdoing it. So going back to children and sugar, imagine how children feel from, and not knowing, being a child, not knowing any other way to feel. Basically, from the moment they get up, they're charged up. They feel like that all of the time. And then by the time they get home from school, they're crashing all over the place. So they hit themselves again with a soda or some kind of microwavable afternoon snack. And we won't even go into the other garbage that's in a lot of these processed foods. That would be another, like, 10 shows in and of itself. But kids just
absolutely
don't have any other reference point. And it's sad because they are basically walking around and they're pre-diabetic or they're diabetic and they're developing obesity problems, and they don't have any other way of living or being. They've never experienced that whole food sort of feeling that you do get when you eat something like fruit instead of Fruit Loops.
You know what?
Yeah,
one
I love it.
Barbara, I gotta bring up a really important point. A lot of schools today, who find their children in the classroom a little unruly, and how they solve that problem is by drugs, the Ritalin, and all of those stimulants that are really bad. And there's been, over the past maybe 20 or 30 or 40 years, there's been a proliferation of prescriptions for those drugs. when the unruly children, instead of drugging them, they have no concern or no awareness of changing their diet. What would you say to that, Barbara?
Yeah, well, we don't have time to even tackle that issue on this show because it is a completely separate issue. Sugar is a small part of that. It's much bigger than that. I would love to address that in the future. I personally have done an awful lot of research on that. Yeah, I was just going to say, for parents who have kids with ADHD, go to the Feingold Diet or Feingold, do a Google search. You'll find a website that gives you great tips on what you can remove from your child's diet that will, in 75% of the children tested, immediately offer changes in the child's behavior. I want to go back to two parents who don't have time to cook. A classic school lunch is peanut butter and jelly, maybe a cup of applesauce, you know, get your kids some fruit, and fruit punch, right? That has as much sugar as 4 Twinkies because of the added sugar in the bread, the added sugar in the peanut butter, the sugar in the jelly, the added sugar in the applesauce, the added sugar in the fruit punch, and there's almost no fiber, a little bit in the applesauce, a little bit in the bread. There are some really easy things you can do to change that, but I want to talk just like 1 minute, what is the cost of this? Obesity is number one. 30% of our adolescents are obese. 10% are morbidly obese. The fastest growing segment of our population that is gaining in obesity is 5 and under. 10% of 5-year-olds are now considered obese. Diabetes has jumped 30%. And there has been noticeable increases in heart disease, high blood pressure, and other inflammation-based diseases like significant autoimmune diseases like rheumatoid arthritis, as well as brain diseases that are associated with aging. All of this has to do with the inflammation caused by the sugar molecule in the body. So don't think it's just, if I'm skinny, I'm okay eating sugar, because that's not the whole truth.
And you think about all of the other additives and things that are in these same foods that are high in sugar, and that is just another contributor. And there are many other things of being a plant-based wellness consultant. I have some to quote Rip Eccleston, I have some beef with meat. But basically, yes, the sugar, also you have this the effect where it will your nutrients. And going back to kids in the classroom and in conjunction with parents that don't really have a lot of time to cook. Kids in the classroom, that whole thing, again, Barbara, you're right, it could be another several shows. Whether or not the science supports the idea that sugar causes hyperactivity, and some people say it does and some people say it doesn't, it seems to depend on the child. The kids are still basically on drugs, whether or not they're being medicated. And interesting, referring to Barbara's statistics on obesity, I found a study done by the National Institutes of Health last year. And what they did is they took this group of children who were obese and they cut their sugar down. They cut out the added sugar in their diet. But the interesting thing is what they did is they didn't even bother to replace it with healthier foods. They just replaced it with other starches at the same caloric level so these kids wouldn't lose weight. And after, I believe it was after 10 days, they measured these kids' metabolic markers, things like their cholesterol and their blood pressure, their triglycerides. They showed a marked and measurable lowering of all of the bad markers, the LDL cholesterol, diastolic blood pressure, the triglycerides, and this was not even making them eat healthier. This was just cutting down the added sugar. So it shows a really strong correlation just between eating sugar and all of these metabolic and disease markers that Barbara was talking about.
Absolutely. Thank you for that. That's perfect.
Yeah, that was a great study. I was astonished.
So, you know, any issue is very complex. This is a complex issue. What would you say, and we could probably spend many hours just discussing this, how can we fix the problem? Barbara?
Education. Education for parents. And I'm a big, big, big believer in having people, parents in particular, understand it's not all or nothing. Every single thing you do will help. If the only thing you can do is change your kid's soda to pure fruit juice at first, do it. If the only thing you can do is change your kid's fruit juice to half fruit juice, half water, do it. If the only thing you can manage is put a bowl of fruit on the counter and tell them when they're hungry for a snack, eat all the fruit they want, do that. I think people get so tripped up in guilt that they can't do the whole nine yards. They're not making meals by hand. They're not, you know, packing their home lunch. That they just give up, and that's not how it has to be. So that's my tip.
Sam?
Well, I do want to second Barbara that it is a process. That is something that I always tell people that I work with. Being a plant-based wellness consultant, people ask me, well, you know, if we work with you, do I have to give all this up all at once? And I say, you know, I would like to see you make a 180-degree change, but I know that for a lot of people it's not possible because it's a process where you have to start with steps that make sense to you where you are. There are some people who are far enough along where they could say to their kids, okay, we're cleaning out all the safeties, we're cleaning out all this, we're cleaning out, and they could do that, and it would not be a problem because they're ready for that. But there are other people who would look at you and go, well, then what am I going to feed them? And you'd have to start with them. I am a big proponent of teaching people how to cook their own stuff and how to do it in a way that allows them to have it on hand without having to spend an inordinate amount of time in the kitchen. The other night I taught a class over at Different Drummer all about Different Drummer Kitchen in Albany, I'm sorry, all about how to make healthy snacks and meals. And one of the things that I did is it's a dish called overnight oats, where you actually will put your oats in a jar with whatever your choice liquid is, a freshly juice, say non-dairy milk, something like that, and you put dried fruit in it and nuts or peanut butter, something that's not a sweetened peanut butter, a unsweetened peanut or nut butter, and you actually will stir it together, you stick it in the fridge, and in the morning you have something that you can just pull out and go. So if you have to rush the kids off to the bus, you could actually give them oatmeal without ever having to cook, and it takes about 5 minutes to throw together the night before. So even if you have multiple children, you could spend 15 minutes and they still have a nourishing breakfast. But I'm big on being able to teach people how to take care of themselves and their families with whole food solutions that can be made in batches, things like soup and stew and chili, things like even certain Indian foods, just things that the kids are going to enjoy. And so that you could have something that you could put in their hand or toss in their lunchbox. One of the things that I really highly recommend is a hummus and vegetables. That's a big thing. Kids love veggies and they love to dip. And hummus eliminates the garbage factor of the ever-popular ranch dressing. But there's so many things that you can do. And then when the kids do want something sweet, you can do something like a homemade energy bite, which is sweetened usually with dried fruits, and they have things like no sugar added nut butters in them. So the kid is going to get a sweet treat that almost tastes like a candy bar. The absolute easiest thing that you can do is to take a medjool date, cut it in half, and put a slop of some kind of nut or seed butter, again with no added sugar or oil, right in the middle, and it tastes just like a Snickers bar. So these kids can still have a sweet treat, but it's a whole food, and then the rest of the time, they can have real meals that don't require hours on the part of parents.
Now I've got two questions where you might want to speak now, or maybe we could do it in another show. And like I said before, a lot of parents are busy, you know, to make the proper lunches. So they'll give their kids some money to buy lunch at school or the breakfast at school, how would you rate the school lunches? Are they healthy? Are they promoting health? Or is it leading further to children's deterioration, Barbara?
I think, oh my gosh.
Well, it does depend on the school. I would say easily the majority of public schools are going to have subpar breakfast and lunches. And you have to, this is another conversation, because the subsidies that allow for the free food programs that so many children actually have to have in order to have any calories, much less what the calories contain, 35%. 40 million children are food insecure. If they don't eat at school, they don't eat at all. 40 million kids in America. That's a whole other conversation to have. Absolutely, for sure, the breakfasts are god-awful. I happen to live in an area where there's a school that has 100% organic lunches. So, it depends on the area you live in, for sure. But the effect on your child is pretty devastating, because your kid is going to be basically eating processed foods and sugar. And then there's the dyes, the genetically modified organisms. I could go on and on. Anything you can do to make that better, and that's a whole other show. What can we tell parents? What tips can we give parents? Because I have a ton of them. I raised three kids and two nieces part of the time. I do want to end, though, my piece of this by saying it is not a better choice to give a child diet anything. So I want every parent to understand that. Removing sugar by exchanging it for fake sugar is a far worse health challenge than the sugar itself, as bad as the sugar is. That's my opinion.
And we could do an entire conversation just on that.
Yes, we could.
And one quick thing. Both of you, I'm sure, are aware of the fact, Sam and I are in New York, and it's probably, an issue throughout the country. And that's to raise the minimum wage. And, of course, there's a big debate. Okay, so if many people are living just at or below the poverty level and can't afford to feed themselves or their children properly, what would you say to that question, Barbara?
In regards to the raising the minimum wage, you mean?
Yes.
Okay.
Barbara?
This is a political question, not a food-based question. I have certainly my personal opinion. I'm not really willing to go there on this show, because I don't think I have time to explain my position. However, I feel that everyone should be able to afford to eat. Bottom line,
yes.
That's my personal opinion.
Okay.
I have to say too that it's such a large issue that it could be, again, it could be several shows, but I think that the problem here has a lot more to do with there's so much involved here. I think it has to do with so much more than whether or not there's a high minimum wage, because even when you get people on a living wage, there can be other factors, government program factors and aid factors that actually still, once they're on a living wage, actually put them in a worse position than they were before, because they are now not eligible for the aid that was allowing them to feed their children before. And I wish I could remember the name of the documentary that I saw. It was a documentary about this, about being able to eat well and not being able to eat well. And in it, they featured a woman who had two children, and she happened to start out as unemployed, and the wage, the aid that she got allowed her to give her kids food. Then she got a job. It was a good enough job, but the wages put her in a bracket where she was no longer able to receive aid, and there was a scene in which she had just enough money who split one can of SpaghettiOs between her two children for dinner, and she had nothing. So you can see that it's a much larger issue than whether or not there's enough money in the household or coming in. But I agree with Barbara. Everyone should be able to afford to eat. We have absolutely no excuse. God has blessed us with so many calories available that we don't even need all of the ones that are available to us every day, and yet people go hungry. So there's no excuse for that.
Thank you, ladies. This is a conversation that will be continued, because both of you have talked about, when we mentioned specific issues, that you had both said that the time span here was way too short. So this will be continued. You have been listening to Arthur. Why don't you, both of you, tell a little bit about yourself and promote yourself a little bit. Barbara?
Well, thanks. I've been a wellness coach for about 25 years. I work with whole food products and whole food ancient foods. I'm an education I educate via lectures and seminars. And I wrote a book called Beyond Foods. You can find that page on Facebook and like it. And I try to load that page with tips, facts, and information about food choices. Thank you.
Sam?
Oh.
Are you there, Sam?
Yeah. Maybe she's not. Okay, you've been listening to Focus on Albany. And if there is anything about this show that sparked your interest, please send me an email at CynthiaPooler@hotmail.com. That's CynthiaPooler@hotmail.com. The three of us will talk about these issues, and the conversation will be continued. You've been listening to author Barbara Swanson and Teresa Houghton.
I am still here. Can you hear me?
Oh, yes.
Hello?
Great. Now we can hear you.
Oh, good. Okay. I'm sorry. Technical difficulty with my new Bluetooth headset right there. I can just sneak in at the end here. I am a wellness consultant and have been doing it for about a year and a half. I teach classes in the Albany area, so you can look for me. My next one is coming up at Hudson Valley Community College, so find me in the book, the catalog. You can check out my services on my website. My wellness consulting business is called Quantum Vegan, and that's just quantumvegan.com. I am also on Facebook with a page that can be liked. And every month I send out an email list with recipes, information, event announcements. And I try to, similar to what Barbara said, is I take a whole food approach, but also what I do is 100% plant-based. So I'm completely down with whole foods and nothing processed.
Thank you, ladies. And this is a conversation that will be continued. Have a wonderful day, and we will talk soon.
Thank you all. Bye.
Bye.
Bye.